If you like, you may come with us to visit your family. I was taken back, but while my heart leapt with joy, I instantly remembered my work at the chambers. The generous minister, sensing my thoughts, resumed, "You have a fair number of extra service hours to your credit. Therefore Genesius will easily grant you a 1 week leave of absence after your first year of active collaboration." Overwhelmed with joy, I thanked him, weeping and laughing at the same time. At last, I was going to see my beloved wife and children again. Chapter 49, Returning Home. Like a child led by his benefactors, I arrived in my hometown with the indescribable sensation of a traveler returning home after long absence. The countryside hadn't changed noticeably, the neighborhood's old trees were still there, as were the sea and sky in that same indefinite scent. Full of excitement and joy, I no longer noticed Lori's anxious and preoccupied expression. I took my leave of the small caravan which went on ahead. Clarence embraced me and said, "You have a whole week at your disposal. I'll come to see you daily, since I have to return regularly to take care of some problems regarding Lori's reincarnation. If you wish to return to the Astral City, you can do so in my company. Be well, Andre." After a last goodbye to Liza's devoted mother, I found myself alone, inhaling deeply the air of times past. I didn't waste time examining my surroundings, but quickly made my way through the streets towards my home. My heart beating fast, I approached the large entrance gate. As in the past, the wind whispered softly through the small park. Azaleas and roses bloomed there, greeting the spring. Opposite the front door gracefully rose the palm tree which Thelia and I had planted on our first wedding anniversary. Intoxicated with joy, I entered the house. I noticed that it was greatly changed. Where was the old jacaranda wood furniture? Of high quality Brazilian wood. And the large picture of our family, where Zelia, myself and the children had formed such a gracious group. What had happened? Afflicted and anxious, I began to stagger with emotion. I went into the living room, where I saw my youngest daughter, now quite a young lady. Almost at the same moment, Zelia came out of our bedroom with a gentleman who, at first sight, appeared to be a doctor. I shouted my joy with the full strength of my lungs, but the words echoed through the house unheeded. Suddenly I understood the situation and, disappointed, fell silent. I held Zelia in my arms with all the tenderness I had held for so long, but she seemed absolutely insensitive to my caresses. Looking extremely anxious, she asked the gentleman something I could not quite catch. Lowering his voice, he answered, "I won't be able to make sure diagnosis until tomorrow. The pneumonia is presenting serious complications, owing to his high blood pressure. Dr. Ernest will need the utmost care and absolute rest." Who could Dr. Ernest be? I was lost in a sea of questions, until I heard my wife plead in anguished tones, "Oh, doctor. For the Lord's sake, save him. I couldn't bear a second widowhood." Zelia wept and wrung her hands, showing acute nervous distress. A thunderbolt couldn't have struck me with greater violence. Another man had taken possession of my home, and my wife had forgotten me. The house was no longer mine. Had it been worthwhile to wait so long to be met with such disillusionment? I ran to my room only to find the spacious chamber completely changed. On the bed lay a middle-aged man, clearly in a poor state of health. Three dark entities walked to and fro beside him, doing their utmost to aggravate his sufferings. My first instinct was to despise the intruder with all my strength, but I was no longer the same man. The Lord had summoned me to the practice of His doctrine of brotherly love and forgiveness. Although I knew He was surrounded by inferior entities, devoted to evil, I wasn't able to help Him immediately. I sat down, bewildered and disappointed, watching Zelia walk in and out of the room several times and caress the patient with the loving tenderness that had been all mine. After a few hours of bitter observation and meditation, I returned to the living room, where my two daughters sat talking. New surprises followed. The elder had married and carried a little baby in her arms. But, what about my son? Where could he be? After giving the necessary instructions to an old nurse, Zelia, apparently calmer, joined the girls, "I came to see you today. Mother, said my eldest child, not only to pay Dr. Ernest a little visit, but also because, all morning, the thought of Father hasn't left my mind, and my heart seems to feel his presence. It's a feeling I can't define. She couldn't finish, and her eyes filled with tears. To my great surprise, Zelia answered her with sharp authority, Nonsense. This is the last straw. Worried as I am, I still have to put up with your silly attitudes. You must control that old-fashioned sentimentality, my child. I have strictly forbidden any mention to your father in this house. Don't you know how it annoys Ernest? I sold everything that reminded me of the dead past, even had the wall redecorated. Can't you help me with my efforts? Since my sister became involved with this darn spiritism, the younger girl added, she has kept her head full of nonsense. Such foolishness. The idea of the dead coming back is the height of absurdity. I am not expressing religious convictions, she answered, still crying. Is it a crime to remember and miss our father? Don't you have any love in your hearts? Have you no feelings? If father were here, mother, his only son wouldn't be out acting so crazily. Nonsense, Zelia retorted irritably. Each of us must follow the fate assigned by God. Andre is dead. Remember that and please stop lamenting the irremediable past. I approached my weeping child and dried her tears, murmuring words of comfort and encouragement, which she registered subjectively as consoling thoughts. Well now. Here was I in quite an unexpected situation. I finally understood why my friends had for so long delayed my visit to my earthly home. Sorrows and disappointments followed in rapid succession. I felt as if my home had been transformed by burglars and ruined by voracious worms. Belongings, positions, affection, nothing was left but the faithful heart of one daughter. All the long years of suffering and torment in the dark regions beyond the tomb, even the bewildering agony of the first days after death, had not made me shed such heartbreaking tears. The night came and went, and a new day dawned, finding me in the same perplexing condition, hearing words and witnessing attitudes I could never had imagined. In the evening Clarence came to see me as he had promised. Seeing how desperate I was, he tried to comfort me with friendly and wise words, I understand your sorrow, but I can't help rejoicing at this splendid opportunity. I have no new instructions for you, as any advice now would be inopportune. However, my dear friend, I can forget the recommendations of Jesus to love God above all things and our neighbor as ourselves. This, when followed, works real miracles of happiness and understanding in our lives. I thanked him with emotion, and asked for his continued support. Clarence smiled and left. Then, facing bitter reality, absolutely alone in this hour of trial, I began to meditate on the meaning of the gospel's command. Gradually my thoughts became calmer. After all, why condemn Zelia's actions? Had I been the spouse left alone on earth, would I, perhaps, have borne the prolonged solitude? Wouldn't I have found a thousand excuses to justify a second marriage? And why hate the poor, sick man? Wasn't he also my brother, in the house of our Lord? Our home might be in even worse conditions if Zelia hadn't accepted his support. It was necessary for me to fight and conquer my ruthless selfishness. Jesus had led me to new sources of enlightenment, and I could no longer act as a simple man on earth. My family no longer consisted of only a wife and three children, but was made up of hundreds of patients in the chamber of rectification. It expanded to include the whole universal community. As I gave myself up to this new trend of thoughts, I felt that true love was beginning to flow from the blessed wounds which had been inflicted on my heart. Chapter 50, A Citizen of the Astral City. I felt terribly tired the second night. I was beginning to realize the value of spiritual nourishment through mutual love and understanding. In the Astral City I could go for several days of active work without ordinary food. The presence of our dear friends, their affection, the absorption of pure elements through the air and water had been enough to refresh me. Here, however, in my earthly home, there was nothing except a battlefield where my loved ones had ceased to be my friends. I thought about Clarence's inspiring words, and they brought some peace and comfort to my heart. For the first time I began to understand human needs. I was not Zelia's keeper, but her brother and friend. Likewise, I was not my children's master, but their companion along the road to spiritual enlightenment. I recalled Laura telling me that we should all act like the bees, approaching the flowers of life, the memories of the noble souls we have met along the path, and extracting from each the substance of good examples, to acquire the honey of wisdom. I decided to take her advice and began by remembering my mother, who had sacrificed herself to return to the earth and adopt those unhappy women as beloved daughters. Similar edifying examples abound in the Astral City. Minister Veneranda had been working for centuries for the benefits of the spiritual group closely related to her. Narcisa was serving in the chambers to obtain spiritual endorsement of a return to the physical world to help her loved ones. Hilda had overcome the dragon of inferior jealousy. And what about the countless gestures of fraternity I had received from my friends in the colony? Clarence had welcomed me with the devotion of a father, Liza's mother had received me as a son, and Tobias had made me his brother. Each of my new friends had offered me something useful to help me build up a new mental attitude. I tried to distance myself from the apparent ingratitude I found in my old home. With divine love above all, I put the needs of my fellow man before my own personal sentiments. Though extremely tired, I entered the room of the sick man, whose condition worsened from moment to moment. Zelia was standing by the bed holding his head in her arms. In tears, she pleaded, "Ernest, Ernest, have pity on me. Don't leave me, my darling. What will become of me if you die?" The sick man caressed her hands and managed to answer with intense affection, in spite of the strong dyspnea that affected him. "I prayed to the Lord to grant me the strength necessary to be understandable, and to consider this couple as my brother and sister. I could see that Zelia and Ernest loved each other deeply. And if I truly wanted to be their brother, I must certainly do everything in my power to help them." I set to work. I began by trying to enlighten the ignorant entities who kept a close link with the patient. My difficulties were enormous, and I felt exhausted. In this emergency, I remembered that Tobias had once told me that not all the inhabitants of the Astral City needed an Airbus for transportation. Those more evolved could use volitation as a more convenient means. They could also communicate over long distances mind to mind, using thought language. Those who are attuned use the process of mental communication at will, regardless of distance. I remember how useful Narcisse's help would be, and made up my mind to try. I concentrated, and in the vibrations of a fervent prayer to God I addressed Narcisse, asking for her help. I told her mentally of my painful experience and my great desire to help, and pleaded urgently with her not to abandon me. Then the unexpected happened. After some 20 minutes, while I was still concentrated in my prayer, I felt a light touch on my shoulder. It was Narcisse, who had answered my call. "I've heard your call, my friend," she said, smiling, "and here I am. I couldn't have been more happy." The devoted nurse looked around and immediately understood the gravity of the circumstances. "We don't have time to waste," she said. She immediately began applying strengthening passes to the patient, raising the barrier between him and the dark entities, who disappeared as if by magic. Then she turned to me and said firmly, "We must resort to nature." I followed her promptly. Sensing my curiosity, she explained, "Man is not the only one to receive and emit fluids. All nature does the same. In our patient's case, we need the trees. They will be a great help to us." Wondering at this new lesson, I followed her in silence. After arriving at a place filled with enormous trees, Narcisse called out to someone with words I couldn't understand. In a few moments, 8 spirit entities responded. To my great surprise, I saw Narcisse ask them whether there were mango and eucalyptus trees in the neighborhood. Having received the required information from her friends, who were unknown to me, Narcisse turned to me and explained, "The brothers who have just come to our aid are ordinary workers in the vegetable kingdom," said Narcisse. "Seeing my wonder," she continued, "you see, there is nothing useless in our father's house. Wherever there are those needing instruction, there will also be those willing to teach. Whenever difficulty arises, providence comes in." The only unfortunate being in the divine creation is the improvident spirit who condemns himself to the abysses of evil. With the emanations of the eucalyptus and mango trees, Narcissa quickly manipulated a certain substance, which we applied to the patient through his ordinary breathing and by absorption through his skin. Ernest improved visibly. Early the next morning the doctor observed, extremely surprised, what an extraordinary reaction. A real miracle of nature. Zelia was happy, and the house was full of life again. As for myself, I felt great joy in my heart. Deep courage and beautiful hopes reinvigorated me. I recognized that, deep down within me, the strong chains of inferiority had been broken forever, and true brotherly love and a sincere wish to serve had taken their place. That same day I followed Narcissa back to the astral city. For the first time, I tried volitation. In a moment's time we had covered great distances. The banner of happiness unfurled in my soul. I told the generous nurse about the lightness I was feeling, and she explained, in the astral city, a great number of our friends could easily do without the airbus and go about on their own within the areas of our vibratory range, but as the majority have not yet acquired that faculty, we all abstain from using it in public places. This abstention, however, doesn't impede us from using it outside of town, when it is necessary to cover long distances and save time. A higher comprehension and new joy enriched my spirit. Instructed by Narcissa, I went to and from between the earthly house and the spiritual city without any great difficulty. I was thus able to intensify the treatment of Ernest, who improved rapidly. Clarence visited me daily and showed himself satisfied with my work. At the end of the week, my first leave of absence from the chambers of rectification had come to an end. Ernest's health was restored and the couple, whom I now loved as my dear brother and sister, were happy again. It was time, now, to return to my duties. In the peaceful light of a gorgeous sunset, I left for the astral city totally changed. In those 7 short days I had learned precious practical lessons in understanding and brotherly love. The sublime beauty of the evening filled my mind with lofty thoughts. How great is divine providence! I said to myself. How wisely the Almighty plans our work in life situations. How He attends to His creation with such love. All of a sudden something broke my meditation. Over 200 of my companions were coming in my direction. They greeted me joyously, giving me a generous welcome. Isis, Licinia, Narcissa, Silvera, Tobias, Celestius and many other workers from the chambers were there. Taken by surprise, I was at a loss and did not know what to do. It was then the minister Clarence came forward, holding out his hand. Andre, until now you have been my pupil in this city. Today, in the name of the governor, I declare you a citizen of the astral city. Why such magnanimity when my triumph was so small? I couldn't hold back the tears of emotion which choked my voice. Thinking about the wisdom of divine mercy, I threw myself into Clarence's fatherly arms, crying out of gratitude and joy. And it is also a film made around this book.